But to get down to far as my parents now, I can't remember. My grandparents, they died before I was born. My daddy, Newsom Corbett, used to be a full-blooded Irishman. He was very jolly. As I told you before, at the age of 64, he could jump in the air and click his heels twice before hitting the ground. And he could dance a jig. He played a jew's harp. You know, the thing you put in your mouth and hum and flip it like this with your finger.
Mm-hmm.
And he would get his tune, then he'd sing, "Oh, Susanna, don't you cry for me. I came from Alabama with a banjo on my knee." And also something about betting on the bay, the races.
Camptown
races.
Mm-hmm.
He would sing that. And he sang all the little Irish ditties that was always so funny to us, you know. And he'd pick up the brogue as he went along. And he was quite an extrovert. I guess I must be related to him. I don't know. I always speak so frankly until it's embarrassing at times. But he loved children. Oh, he loved children. He wanted all the children there and the grandchildren to come. And Elva and Evelyn and Gaston and I would sit on the floor at his knee around the fire after supper, and they'd beg Grandpa, "Tell us an old tale, tell us an old tale." And he was as much a storyteller as Toots, you know, with all the action, and quite animated with it, you know. He'd tell the tales, but they were true things. He told of this young neighbor's boy when he was a young man himself. He was sent to bring in the cows late in the afternoon. And when he failed to return after dark, they notified the neighbors, and they organized a search for him. And they finally heard his screaming coming from the middle of a swamp. It was Rabie Swamp down there is where it was. And the Indians had captured him and put him spread eagle on the ground and put forked sticks on both hands and on both feet, and had built a fire at his feet and was gradually burning him from his feet up. And they were doing a dance around him. And the boy's feet were so badly burned they had to be amputated, both of them. But the men began to fire their muskets into the Indians, and they scattered and rescued the boy. Now, these were actual happenings that he told us about. And also he told it once at his father's house, Martin Corby. It was real cold weather, and they were killing hogs, you know, for the meat for the year. And usually they got people would come in to help each other in their annual slaughter, you know. And this young man, probably a teenager, came in his father's place. His father was ill, and he lived across the other side of the bay from Grandpa Corbett's. And so having been helping with the slaughter all day, naturally his clothes were covered with blood, and he was loaded down with goodies such as liver and spare ribs and stuff that we would give them for helping, you know, to take home, and backbone and all that sort of stuff. And as he was going through the deepest part of the swamp, just a path that led to his home, a tiger jumped him. A panther, he called him.
Right.
And the boy threw him the meat, and the tiger devoured that, and then he jumped for the boy. And so it was a three-path road with deep ruts, you know, just two ruts for the wheels and one for the horse to walk in the center. And so he He fell on the edge of the road and caught his toes in that deep rut and held on to the wire grass with his hands for dear life and screamed, and his family heard him screaming. And when they reached him, the tiger had torn his clothes off his back and clawed the meat to the bone all the way down his spine and buttocks. But they rescued him. And why? How they managed to kill the infection only with turpentine. That was the main antiseptic then, you know. But he survived, but he wore the wounds from the tiger's claws and the rest of his life.